We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Audacy put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Audacy. Visit ads.audacy.com.
Welcome to Sports Talk here on the Big 870. Mike Dettelia along with Charlie Long in studio. Bobby J taking some days off. His son Bo's getting married next Saturday, so that means for the first time since 2004, Bobby J and I won't be doing Draft Fest, but Bob's got bigger details to deal with, and wish Bo and the families involved the best of luck. And so Bob won't be with us for draft weekend, and we're going to miss him. But bigger fish to fry, so to speak, his son Bo's getting married out in Florida. Charlie, kind of a slow breaking news deal today, but Haley Van Lith this morning announced that she has committed to play at TCU, a better fit for her. So she has committed to play for the TCU Horned Frogs, go play basketball there her final year. And what's interesting, the commitment, he was a redshirt freshman last year, Kai Preen, who played at St. James, Baton Rouge kid, played his final year at St. James High School, who put himself in the transfer portal, but basically says, hey, do not contact me. Comments there tells you he's already sort of made up his mind, and he's going to this is reportedly going to take that visit to Tulane this weekend. Oh. And so, man, John Sumrall doing pretty good there, getting those guys. Preston was there already, another former St. James guy at wide receiver. So, man, John is loading up on the wide receivers.
Yeah, the offensive side of the ball for sure, Mike. But I just want to circle back around to what Wilson Alexander, the reporter for The Advocate that we had on earlier this week, said. After spring ball, you know, Brian Kelly said that they wanted to go into the transfer portal and get defensive tackle. That's what he was focused on. That was the position he wanted. But they were already over the roster limit. So he was just like, don't panic if you start seeing some names enter the transfer portal. It's to be expected.
And Kai and Connor Galbraith, the tight end, kind of blocking tight end, he's also in the transfer portal. And you'll see a few more. But, again, to get what you need, you're going to have guys leave. You can't keep all of them.
Correct.
And so defensive tackle, and looks as though they're attracting a couple of defensive tackles that are in the transfer portal looking to leave, and it's certainly a huge position. I remember this is January, maybe a week after the bowl game, we had Pete Jenkins on. I said, Pete, what about defensive tackle position? And his comment was, they need talent and they need depth.
Yeah, I think he said that Bo Davis, you know, he was going to earn his contract was the words that he used. Like, he's a great defensive line coach. I mean, you saw what he did at Texas. He's coming back home to LSU to be the new defensive line coach. And that the talent just there, it wasn't there, Mike, because they lost all those players in the draft. Three different defensive tackles entered with Jordan Jefferson, Makai Wingo, and most surprisingly, Mason Smith. So that's a position that's been kind of gutted in the offseason. They needed to go out and get some more talent. I think that that's obviously the clear position of need for this Tiger roster.
Yeah, you can talk about, well, we brought in this freshman. You're talking about an 18-year-old getting up to play against a grown
tackle,
young man,
Mike,
at 21, 22 years old. I'm not saying there's a few of them like that, but there's very few that can do it. And you can use them as part of a rotation. But they need to bring in people who have some skins on the wall. They've played college football before, so it is an area that they need to get much better at in the offseason, in the second round of the transfer portal. And I would look for that they'll sign at least three and quite possibly four.
Yeah, Wilson said definitely three is what I remember him talking about, because they just need to overhaul it right now. Because, I mean, you saw what was happening. Yes, the offensive line is expected to be the strength of LSU's roster, but when they were winning that much and that often, it's also kind of concerning that the defensive line was struggling as badly as they were. But it's also kind of to be expected. It's the strength of the roster versus the weakness. So once again, circling back around to what Wilson said and to our point about all this, don't be surprised if you see a couple of those names. And they're not going to be any necessarily gigantic names that would just shock anybody. I wouldn't expect, at least, Mike. But don't be surprised if a couple LSU players do enter the portal. It is okay. They are currently over the roster limit, and they're going to have to add some defensive tackles. So just keep an eye on it.
Yeah, I also want to tell everybody, 1 week from today, it's the NFL draft. And so, Saints fans, hey, you want to tune in next Thursday starting at 4 o'clock. Deuce McAllister, Mike Haas will be anchoring our draft preview show with Saints head coach Dennis Allen, executive vice president, general manager Mickey Loomis, Clint Kubiak, Joe Woods, the defensive coordinator, Darren Rizzi, the assistant head coach, special teams coordinator, also to the vice president and general manager, assistant general manager of college personnel, Jeff Ireland, and director of pro personnel from on the Bayou himself, Michael Parrington, along with Terry Wooden, national scout, all the Saints assistant coaches. They'll be on from 4 to 6. Hey, it's must-listen-to radio to hear their comments right before the draft. And at 6 o'clock, Steve Geller and I will take over, and then Haas and Deuce will join in with us, and we'll be at Las Cruces Tex-Mex restaurant out in Metairie. So come on by and visit us. We'll give you all the first-round pick action. But before we start that, it's the Saints draft preview show with Haas and Deuce at the Saints camp. We come back on with us. We'll have on with us SEC Network baseball analyst and former LSU player Todd Walker right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
Welcome back to Sports Talk here on the Big 870. Mike Dettea along with Charlie Long in studio. And on our Oakland Heart Jewelers talk and text line, one of the best in the business from the SEC Network, baseball analyst Todd Walker, great player for the LSU Tigers. Todd, thanks so much for joining us again on the Big 870.
You're welcome. How are you?
We're doing great, Todd. Sinatra sang it years ago. It's all or nothing at all. And you can look at LSU in a year's time, and that's basically what you got. When you hot, you hot, and when you not, you not. And the hot team in Louisiana, we had him on last week at this time, Coach Deggs at University of Louisiana, Raging Cajuns, and he was like, Mike, never said it better. You know, when you hot, everything goes right, and when you not, nothing goes right.
Yeah, I love me some Matt Deggs. I think the problems at LSU are a little deeper than a hot streak. The guys just haven't done what you expected them to do. And that's, you know, they got a little younger after last year, obviously. They lost the two best players in the country in Paul Skeens and, you know, Dylan Cruz. Usually you're lucky if you have one of the best players in the country. They had two of them. Then they had Trey Morgan, the Gold Glover, and then they had Ty Floyd, the best number two probably in the country. So they lost a big chunk out of last year's national championship team. And they've had to put a lot of freshmen in there, and you don't never know how they're going to respond. The Larson kid is actually hitting pretty well in limited time. And some of them have performed well. But the guys you expected to carry the team have just not done it. Tommy White's having a decent year. Or a good year, I should say. Overall, we thought the offense would be better, and they just don't have enough pitching so far.
Todd, the thing that really jumps out at me is not being able to bring in people on base. That one thing over and over and over, that's been consistent on this team. It hasn't been a lot of consistency, but that's been there. You get guys on base and can't bring them in. And it's every game, and there are different situations, and it's a stat that now they keep with. But, man, that's troubling when you get some hits, you put people on base, and then you stuck two guys or three guys on base, you don't get nobody in.
Yeah, that one's a hard one to figure out. I've been doing this a long time, and a lot of that is just timely hitting luck in a way. Kind of, you know, it's your time when you get up, you find a hole. Mostly it's fighters at the plate, right? Guys that don't strike out much. And as you've seen with this group, there's a lot of swing and miss in Jared Jones and Travinsky and, the middle of that order. And the Milam kid will fight you, but he doesn't have a lot of power. You know, Braswell will fight you a little bit, but he doesn't have a lot of power. So you know, I mean, it's just kind of an offense, like I said, that we expect a little more from. That's just not doing a whole lot. And Tommy White, I love his two-strike approach, and he'll fight you too, but there's a lot of upcut in that swing as well, where, you know, he's going to get a lot of fly ball outs and some home runs. But overall, I think you got to have nine guys that really dig in. And, you know, you're seeing a lot of college baseball now where the kids get to two strikes and they look in the dugout and they beat their chest. That's what they call the two-strike fight, where they're going to battle with two strikes. And you're just not seeing a lot of that out of a lot of clubs in the SEC, not just LSU. But I think that is an issue. And Jay Johnson is an offensive guy, so he knows it. He's on top of it. He's communicated that. But, you know, as we all know, whether you have kids of your own or not, a lot of times, believe it or not, they don't listen or they can't. I feel like they listen. I just don't know if a lot of them can apply what you say into a real scenario. And so I think that's what's happening with the offense. And, you know, Luke Holman's a real ace. You know, and Gage Jump has been a good number two, but they don't have a three. And if Gage Jump doesn't go six or seven, you turn it over to a bullpen. It's just not really that good.
Todd, you can't do anything about the pass, so you got to move on with it. You play Missouri, and man, I give them credit. I don't know how talented they are across the board, but man, they give you a lot of great effort, and they're a feisty group, Missouri. So you got to go on their turf. And you would hope maybe you could sweep a series, but man, I'd be thrilled if they came out of this with two out of three.
Todd, even taking schedules into account, I don't think if I told you a couple weeks ago that Missouri would be two games ahead of LSU in the SEC standings, you would have believed me.
No, I don't think many people would have bought that.
If the season ended today, there's only two teams would be left out of the conference tournament. That's LSU and Auburn.
Right.
And Auburn. So Missouri's in by two games, to your point. I don't really focus on this weekend per se, but LSU's got 15 more games to get to 13 wins within the conference. So they've got three. They got to win 10 of the next 15 games to get into the field of 64 or even be considered. You got to get to that 13 win mark. 12 doesn't do it. 14, I think you're automatically in. 13, I think they put LSU in. But the conference tournament's the first goal. And let me tell you something about Missouri. They just swept Florida at home a few weeks ago. You walk into Columbia, Missouri, when you're used to 12,000 fans and you got 100 in the stands and the ballpark is not up to par with the rest of the conference, you feel like you should win. All those factors are negative factors, and it's tough. Playing Missouri in Columbia is much more difficult than playing them at home, I can promise you that. Yeah. So LSU's got their hands full again this weekend.
So, Todd, looking at the offensive struggles, we've talked a little bit about their poor hitting with runners in scoring position. In SEC play, I think it's well below the Mendoza line. I want to say it's around 193, if my numbers are correct. So you're looking at a couple of issues offensively. That's clearly one. But when we were talking with Scott Sanders a couple weeks ago, he pointed out something really interesting, and I completely agree with him. Jay's been tinkering with the lineup, and he still really hasn't found the consistent leadoff guy. Like, it's maybe Jared Jones had that really good performance in the midweek last week, and then he went into the Tennessee series as the leadoff guy, but he didn't really do much from that spot. So then Jay goes to Michael Braswell, you know, as in game three versus Tennessee, and then he makes another change. He goes to Paxton Kling in the midweek this week. And then, you know, further back, Mac Bingham's also had a shot there, Ethan Fry, all these different guys that he's tried to plug into that really important leadoff spot, and it just really hasn't worked out. So what are your kind of thoughts on that, and who do you think could really fill that role?
Milam is my best guess. Mac Bingham, you said, has been there a little bit. The problem with hitting and baseball in general is you've got to stick with a guy, not for two games, but for 20 games. Unfortunately, in college baseball, you only get 50. And you've got to really believe a kid in order to put him out there, and you can't stick with him. In pro baseball, you can stick with him for 50 games, and then, you know, that's a good sample size. But in college baseball, if you put them in for a couple games, they don't do it, and you pull them out, and you got all this going on, then nobody can really get a feel, and nobody can be consistent. I think Milam would be the answer, but I'm not positive that he could respond. He's a freshman, you know, and so, like I said, you never really know how freshmen are going to respond. But I think that is a good point. But I would argue you need a good two-hole, you need a good three-hole.
Yeah,
Texas A&M has all that. You know, Texas A&M has all that. Arkansas is getting it done without offense. They're 13th out of 14 teams offensively within the conference, Arkansas, and they still are 12-3. So you got to have a staff. Baseball is all pitching. Arkansas has it, A&M has it, Tennessee kind of has it. But you got to have pitching, man. And again, if you're going without a number three, now LSU got it done last year without a number three. They just put it all together at the right moment. So that's why I mentioned the field of 64. Once you get to that point, it becomes an entirely new season and nothing matters in the past. But before the field of 64, you got to get into the conference tournament. And that's what LSU's fighting for. But they got more issues than the leadoff guy. I think, you know, they give away a lot of free passes. The 190 with guys in scoring position is not good. But, again, I would like to see how many strikeouts they've had with guys in scoring position. I bet it's at the 30% mark, and that's way too high. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
You got to put the ball in play in order to get hits. So there's a lot of issues going on right now. I can promise you this, though. Jay Johnson is grinding this thing out, man. I'm sure that he hasn't slept. He's probably got a bed in that office just trying to figure all this out, along with Nate Yeske, who I think is one of the better pitching coaches in the country, but it's his first year dealing with these kids. Sometimes it takes more than a few months to figure it all out. But Jay's trying as hard as he can. I texted him the other day, and I know that it's killing him not to figure this thing out. But in the end, the kids have to get it done, and so far they're just not.
Todd, I think to your point about Arkansas's pitching staff, I want to say their ERA is around like 2.6. And as you mentioned, that's a team ERA. It's like 0.8 points higher than like the second highest team. It's just incredible what they're doing. We saw it firsthand when the Tigers traveled to Fayetteville a couple weeks back. I mean, they're going to be the favorites, or at least one of the favorites. I know Texas A&M's playing some great ball right now as well, entering the postseason because of their pitching. So, as you said, LSU definitely has a bunch of questions to answer. It's not just offensively, but also on the pitching side of things. As you said, like, Luke Holman is the ace. He's actually going to be pitching on Saturday again this weekend, kind of similar to what he did last weekend against Tennessee. He pitched on the second game. They'll be doing that again with Gage Drum taking that game one start for the Tigers. That was announced today. Game three is still TBA, like to be determined, to be announced. And just seeing what happened last weekend with Nate Ackenhausen and the start that he gave the Tigers in that Game 3 matchup against Tennessee, he's been kind of hit pretty hard out of the bullpen at times, but he was solid against a really good Volunteers offense, you know, in that lineup that he went on in Game 3. Is Nate Ackenhausen probably your answer right now for your Game 3 weekend starter?
You would have to believe he is after the performance you just mentioned last weekend. And that was his first start this year. His first start last year, I think, was against Tennessee in Omaha.
Right.
Where he went six and didn't walk anybody. So he seems to respond better to that starting role. I think he probably is the immediate answer, and you roll him out and see how far he can go. Luke Holman is very good. But he isn't Hagen Smith, right? He's not Ryan Prager from Texas A&M. Ryan Prager has a 15-1 strikeout to walk ratio. I mean, go look that up. That's
insane. Oh my goodness,
insane! It's insane. I mean, if you're 3-1, it's like incredible. He's 15-1. So Ryan Prager, and then you match him up with Tanner Jones and Justin Lampkin. I mean, that three is dynamic. Kentucky has three guys in Poozer, Nyman, and then Mason Moore is their ace, but he's pitching in the third slot. So ace doesn't necessarily mean you're pitching on opening night. And they've got three solid guys, plus the bullpens. And back to Arkansas, their bullpen sick, along with a world-class ace in Hagen Smith. And I think the Tiger kid has the best curveball in the country. I mean, he's a little erratic because his stuff's so good. I think you're gonna see a lot of Ty Floyd in him when it gets down to crunch time in the postseason, where he starts to really light it up. And then they got the Mason Molina kid. So Arkansas, not only can they start, but they can also have bullpen guys that come in and shut you down. And Tennessee's got two-thirds of that. But, again, the top three are A&M, Kentucky, and Arkansas. In the ERAs, by the way, within the conference, and they lead by record as well. So baseball's all pitching.
Todd, I know you've always brought up about pitching is king in baseball. When you look at the more complete team in the SEC, I think you've alluded to it, but I think you're somewhat leaning that direction of Texas A&M right now.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, it went complete. Right?
Complete team.
Offense and pitching.
Yes. A&M would have to be that. I mean, Braden Montgomery is a true five-star, five-tool player. Chase LaViolette had 21 homers last year. He's got, like, what, 18 or 19 this year. He's got 40 home runs in 2 years. That's crazy. The Appel kid is backing everybody up in the four spot. He's hitting 360 or whatever. And then the Grahovac, the leadoff guy. So the top four are as good as anybody in the country. But Florida in 2017 had a team batting average of like 259, and they won the national championship because, to our point about LSU, It's timely hits. You don't have to bang out 15 hits. You don't have to hit 330 as a team. Well, that Tennessee is, by the way. Tennessee's hitting 340 or whatever as a team. That's crazy. But you don't have to do that. But you have to have the arms. Arkansas certainly has it. Texas A&M certainly has it. Kentucky. But if I – and Kentucky, by the way, leads the league within the conference in hitting. They don't bash out a lot of homers. But average-wise, they lead the league in stolen bases, too, so they can create some havoc on the pass. But I think the complete team might be Texas A&M overall, but any of those three clubs can beat you on any given day.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting looking at Kentucky. Like, they've kind of come out of nowhere, 14-1 in the SEC. By the way, Missouri's the only team that's beaten them in conference play. Yep. That kind of stood out to me. But, yeah,
that, was, that was a 2-1 game.
Yeah, yes. It was really, really tight. But the thing about Kentucky is, like, they don't hit a ton of homers, but they a majority of the homers they hit have been against SEC pitching. Like, that stood out to me a little bit. And Kentucky, they're playing with a ton of confidence. I can't wait to watch what happens when they play Tennessee this weekend. That's a real premier series. My last question for you here, Todd, is about the LSU pitching staff, going back to your point about it all starts on the mound. LSU's got, like, one bullpen guy that's really, really stepped up this year, and that's been Griffin Herring in conference play. And the way that Jay's kind of used him behind Luke Holman, I really like that duo. But outside of that, like, who can you really count on? It was so unfortunate because when we were looking at this team, like, pre-conference play, like, that was one thing that stood out was their pitching depth. And it just really hasn't showed up against SEC squads.
On paper, they do have a talented team. I mean, Cam Johnson was the second-best left-hander in the country out of high school last year. He's got a 10 ERA. So that's why I say Nate Yeske knows what he's doing. So the communication lines are broken down right there somehow or another because Cam Johnson's talented. And on down the line, there's a ton of talent. Javon Coleman's been there long enough to have figured it out. And I think his ERA is north of 5, along with Gavin Guidry, who pitched, you know, the last out in Omaha. You would think these guys would have had a lot of confidence coming off of the national championship last year and start dealing this year. It just hasn't happened. I don't know. The answer to your question is that they don't really have anybody. I mean, look at the box scores, you know, when they play. I mean, they'll use 4 or 5 guys, and every one of them give up a run or two, every one of them. And so I don't know that they have a shutdown guy in the pen. Kate Anderson is a little fastball heavy. Last time I looked, he's using about 75 or 80% fastballs, which is good for a young kid. You know, it keeps you around the zone, but it's going to get hit around once hitters get you know, on to that thing, that deal that you're throwing too many fastballs. So that's Kate Anderson's issue, but they don't really have a lockdown guy, and that's an issue. And now, again, if last year's any indication, they can find it. They can find it real quick, and they can roll this thing out, but you got to get to the conference tournament first.
Todd, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon. Always great insights, buddy. We really appreciate it.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks,
all
righty. Todd.
SEC Network baseball analyst Todd Walker, former great at LSU, and man, this season has headed south, Charlie, and fast. You got a chance to pull it out, but man, it's going to take a lot of doing.
The route is tough, Mike.
It's going to be a difficult. I can say you can do it, but it's really, really difficult.
It's not impossible, right? But it's got to start this weekend.
It is the Mount Everest climb, man.
Yeah, it really is. And Todd talked a little bit about playing in Missouri is going to be tough. Like, you watched what they did to Florida just a couple weekends ago in Columbia. It's not going to be easy for LSU to go up there and even win the series, if not take even a sweep potentially, but they need to at least take 2 or 3. I think that's they got to start out with a series win. Just like you got to start gaining some confidence at some point.
I think Todd brought up a good point. It's much easier to play them at home than on the road. That's a totally different atmosphere in Columbia than it is when you're playing in Baton Rouge. We'll be back with more Sports Talk here on the Big 870 right after this break. Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike DeTay along with Charlie Long in studio. And it's our Inside the NFL Draft segment brought to you by Craig's Electrical and Generator Service. When the lights go off, Craig's comes on. And today we'll take a look at what might be there in round 2 for the Saints. We've talked a lot about round 1. Certainly offensive line and offensive tackle is the big swing at this particular point that's what you would look at. But in round 2, what becomes available, and I always think there is someone there that you've got rated higher and sometimes much higher, and he is available to you. One of the areas I would not be surprised this team take a look at would be wide receiver, the other one at the safety position.
And that's a good spot for a couple players. So let's start out with the safety. The top-rated safety on your big board, Mike, is Tyler Newbin from Minnesota, who's your 46th overall guy. The Saints, once again, their second-round pick is the 45th overall pick in the draft. So that's the general range where someone like Tyler Newbin could fall off the board. I mean, you go back-to-back picks in the NFL draft on a Minnesota safety, Mike?
Yeah, all I know is Tyler Newbin's a playmaker. Every time you watch Minnesota plays, he is there. He's terrific in run support, does a good job in the coverage part of the game. Excellent open field tackler, but at safety at one time, when I first started doing it, you were looking for like another linebacker to play safety. You were worried about his run support skills. And if he can cover, that's good. If not, well, okay, we'll make up with pass rush instead. Now you better have a cover guy. Tyler Newbin is a really good player, and you think about Antoine Winfield Jr., all those guys coming out of there. And, you know, last year you hit it with another safety from Minnesota with the Saints. I think it's a sneaky need position for the Saints. You can say, oh, well, they signed John Abram. Okay, he's much better near the line of scrimmage. They got rid of Marcus May. Okay, Tyron isn't getting any younger. You better look at that safety position. You play so much dime coverage today. You better have somebody that can be the last line of defense.
When you called Tyler Newbin like a taller Antoine Winfield
Jr., reminds me a lot of
it. It was like a radar went off in my head. Like, that is awesome. Like, you definitely go and make that pick if that's the case. But, you know, a couple other spots. You mentioned receiver, Mike. In such a deep and loaded, basically, class at that position, I really want to get one of those guys, Mike, and with one of those first two-round picks. So you're looking at a couple guys that could go around that 45 area, just generally at wide receiver. I imagine that a couple of them will fall into the second round that we could see potentially being first-round picks because teams think that they can get a guy of equal talent in the second round. One guy that sticks out to me, and it was when we were watching South Carolina's Pro Day, a lot of people were there to see Spencer Rattler. But someone that really stood out was wide receiver Xavier Leggett, who I think you have around 51 on your big board.
Yeah, he's close because there are five or six players with the exact same grade. And Xavier Leggett, thickly built wide out, he can get up the field. He's got speed, big playability, runs with the ball really well after the catch. Now, he's going to have to get a little bit better as a route runner. Sometimes there's a slowdown into a cut and a break. So he's going to have to manage that. But I think with good coaching, that can help you get into and out of a cut and a break a little bit quicker. But he's a big play athlete. And all I knew is Spencer Rattler, when he came to the Manning camp, his first comment is, when I needed something, I'm throwing it to Leggett. He makes the play for us. When we need something, it's him that comes up with the big play. I think in that range is where you're going to see Xavier Leggett get selected.
So that's a name to keep an eye on, Mike. And then another receiver I wanted to talk about before, you know, if the Saints do in fact go with someone other than offensive tackle, I think you have to use that second round pick on tackle. It's just too big of a need. Let's go back to receiver for just a second here. Ricky Pearsall from Florida, Mike. Like, that dude has got some ridiculous hands. He made some crazy catches last year at Florida. And I think that he, you know, maybe not fit the need necessarily on this team as far as what they need from receiver. But, man, the hands are hard to ignore.
He is a very good route runner. Now, at times last year, Florida's passing attack, they ain't setting the world afire. But, man, he is a good player. Really good athlete. Gets into and out of his cuts and breaks quickly. He's got big play potential. He catches the ball so clean out front with his hands. It's almost like, you know, he's got a magnet to the football. And it was funny. 2 years ago at Manning camp, all three LSU quarterbacks were there. Jaden Daniels, Nussmeier, and Miles Brennan. After the practice, I talked to Jaden. I was like, man, you know, things going. He was like, you know, I'm getting used to the situation here at LSU. And we started talking about players that were at Arizona State or had left. First name he brought up, Ricky Pearsall. He said, Mike, he said, I'm just telling you, that guy is a star player. a star player. And he emphasized it, how good of a football player Ricky Pearsall is. And we saw it at times last year at Florida. They didn't have a lot of complimentary stuff on the offensive side of football, and they couldn't stop a cold if they wouldn't. You know, naked in Russia, so to speak, the way they play defensively. But, man, Pearsall is a guy that I think a lot of teams like and aren't saying.
He jumped off the screen, at least, when you were watching his tape. Some of the catches that he made were so ridiculous. And, once again, circling back around to what I said, if you do take Brock Bowers, which I don't think is out of the question, by the way, like maybe some people do, you have to go tackle in round two. So, once again, there are a couple guys that could fall into the round two area. One guy that kind of stands out from this pack, and he may go a little bit before that. If he doesn't, maybe he falls to 45. Jordan Morgan from Arizona, Mike, is pretty intriguing to me.
Yeah, I think he'll go ahead of when the Saints pick in round two. But if he's there, he's tough to pass up. He's more of a finesse player than he is a power player, though he's played on that left side, and he has seen work also on the right side. He's a really good technician. He sort of is a steer angle-type blocker, but a good one. A really good one. Physically, I'd like to see him become a little bit better power player at the point of attack as a run blocker. But last year, if you watched Arizona play, did those defenders get near that quarterback? Man, he was throwing darts downfield. And a lot of it has to do, Jordan Morgan protected him. And there wasn't a lot of people getting pressure on that Wildcat quarterback. Jordan Morgan would be a really good selection if he lasted that long in round two.
I'm in 100% agreeance. And real quick, Mike, we got a text from our text line. It's 0324 said, Mike and Charlie, what are your thoughts on Kitchens, the safety from Miami, and Xavier Worthy from the Texas Longhorns, a wide receiver prospect?
I think Worthy goes either real late in round one or early in round two.
He's so small, but he's so fast. Mike, someone's going to fall in love with him and probably take that really late first-round pick on him. If not, he's going to be one of the first guys off the board.
He's a guy that can – man, he's unbelievable speed-wise. Just his ability to get up the field, make something. But, man, he's awfully thin-based. But you got one shot at him. That's it. And Kitchens is an interesting player. Because of the fact, highly recruited coming out of high school. He was an All-American in 2022. Didn't quite play the same way in 2023. A lot of that had to do with some schemes that they were trying to deal. My thing is, he's the star player on that team. What are you doing? I think he ends up being an early third-round selection.
He's
really
definitely a
good
day-two guy. And, Mike, when we were previewing the safeties, like he was one of those guys that's really packed in to like guys that are going to go from Tyler Newbin in the middle of the second round to maybe late in the third round. So,
yeah, you think about Jaden from Washington State and Cole Bishop from Utah.
A lot of Pac-12 guys, Mike.
A lot of guys in that Pac-12 are played in schools that throw the football a lot. You know why? You not only see it when you play against another team, you see it in practice every day. That's it for our Inside the NFL Draft segment, brought to you by Craig's Electrical and Generator Service. When the lights go off, Craig's comes on. We'll be back to finish it up here in our number one of Sports Talk on the Big 870 right after this break. Finishing up here in our number one of Sports Talk on the Big 870, I'm Max, Jimmy and Gretna and Darren Mettery. Hold on, we'll take you right after the news at 5 o'clock. Hey, you ready to go party? Now's your chance to win a pair of tickets to the first weekend of Jazz Fest. Today's password is Etouffee. That's Etouffee, Etouffee. Now you go to WWL.com/contest with an S, enter that word, and register to win. It's that easy. Don't miss your chance to win Jazz Fest tickets plus round-trip Jazz Fest Express Shuttle passes. WWL is giving away a pair every day this week. All you have to do is listen to Tommy, News, Scoot, or us here on Sports Talk for the Jazz Fest password of the day to see amazing artists like Chris Stapleton, John Batiste, The Killers, Rebirth Brass Band, Heart, and much more. Good luck and happy festing from Miller Lite, the official beer of Jazz Fest and WWL. We come back, we'll have a lot more Sports Talk here on the Big 870 right after this news break.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At-Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field. It's going to go. Alvarez ties the game.
Subscribe to At-Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.